We didn't quite make it through slide seven. A couple more things I wanted to say about it. What did I say are the three sources of additional variation that sex gives us?
Crossing over, independent assembly, and fertilization.
Right, which none of which would work if not for what?
Meiosis.
Well, no, two of those things happen in meiosis, but what I mean is none of those things would be a source of additional genetic variation if it weren't for what?
Mutation.
Right, mutation has to happen in order to create different versions of DNA to begin with. That's like having different cards in the deck. Once that happens, then shuffling the deck gives you even more variation. And two of those three things that sex gives us occur in meiosis. The first two occur in meiosis. The first of those that that occur in meiosis that happens is crossing over. That happens in prophase one, prophase of meiosis one. And remember that crossing over is a physical crossover between non-sister chromatids. A chromatid from one homolog, which is just one of its sister chromatids, and a chromatid from the other homolog, which is not a sister chromatid, right? That's why I say they're non-sister chromatids. One is from the parental version of the chromosome, and the other one is the paternal version, and one is from the maternal version. So those crossover, what's that crossover point called? Chiasma. And then they swap. So you'll have, you know, what was an entirely red, meaning maternal, chromatid will now be partly red and partly blue, and what was totally blue is now mostly blue and partly red. And that means that both of those chromatids that crossed over are now brand new, never before seen sequences of DNA, right? Because they have swapped. But if mutation hadn't made them different to begin with, then swapping would do nothing, right? They would cross over and swap identical pieces, so they wouldn't have changed anything. That's why you have to have mutation first. So that happens in prophase one. That's the first of the three additional variation sources that sex provides. The second one happens in metaphase, but remember that metaphase 1, or metaphase of meiosis 1, is different from what happens in metaphase of mitosis. There's a lining up in both, that's what makes it metaphase, but what lines up in mitosis are individual replicated chromosomes, right? Whereas what lines up, or what line up in metaphase 1 are not individual replicated chromosomes, rather they are tetrads, or pairs of homologous chromosomes. And you can see that in cartoon form right here. Right? There would be six things lining up if this were mitosis, because there are six individual replicated chromosomes. But that's not what happens. There's the two number ones, the two number twos, and the two number threes that line up as tetrads, or homologous pairs. Okay, but notice how they're lining up here. When a tetrad lines up at the metaphase plate, it lines up so that one of those two homologs is facing one pole, and the other homolog in that pair is facing the other pole, because they're going to eventually go to opposite cells, right? Or opposite poles and become part of different cells. But notice that for any given individual tetrad, for each pair, that is, there's two ways that can happen. Using this red and blue scheme, a tetrad could line up with red toward the top, going to go toward that pole, and blue toward the bottom, or it could be the opposite, blue toward the top, red toward the bottom. It's like flipping a coin, right? Well, that second source of variation that sex provides, which is called independent assortment, refers to the fact that how a tetrad lines up, red up or blue up, in other words, does not at all depend on how the other tetrads are lining up. That's why it's independent assortment. So assortment, the word assortment here refers to how they line up. But independent assortment means it's not the case that they all line up with red up or all with red down. It's on a tetrad by tetrad basis. That's why they're independently assorting. And you can see that right here. Two of them happen to line up with red toward the top. The other one lined up with blue toward the top. And that matters because that means this cell is going to get two reds and a blue. The other one's going to get two blues and a red. Right? That results in different cells than if you have a cell with three reds and a cell with three blues. They're genetically different, right? Okay, so that is random assortment. And that adds an additional source of genetic variation beyond what crossing over already has done. Just like different things line up in metaphase of meiosis, one, also different things split compared to mitosis in anaphase one. Since it's different things that lined up, it's going to be different things that divide. Mitosis, remember, splits the chromatids apart because that's what lined up, individual replicated chromosomes. Since it's tetrads lining up in metaphase one, that means anaphase one is going to separate the two things that make up a tetrad, which are the two homologs. And each of those homologs is still replicated, right? You haven't split apart any chromatids here. Which is why when you get done with meiosis one, you still have to have something that's just like mitosis to split those two chromatids apart. Since it's still, after meiosis one, the case that each of those two cells has twice as much DNA as one cell should have. That's why you need that second round of division. And that's why it's just like mitosis. These are already haploid cells at the end of meiosis 1. Remember, it's meiosis 1 where the ploidy gets reduced. Meiosis 2, just like mitosis, maintains the ploidy, but it's already haploid, so it will remain haploid, and that's because all you're doing is separating the two chromatids from each other. Now, they're still considered to be sister chromatids, but notice that after meiosis 1, they're no longer identical sister chromatids because of crossing over, right? So another thing that's important to realize is that whereas mitosis, which involves only one division, results in two cells from that original one, meiosis, which involves two division events, is going to result in four cells from that original one. The original one becomes two cells, and then each of those undergo meiosis two to become two cells each, for a total of four. And when I say meiosis, I'm assuming, kind of incorrectly, that cytokinesis is happening as well. Mitosis, remember, is just division of the nucleus. But cytokinesis is happening concurrent with it, which is why it's listed here in both at the ends of one and two. Okay. Let's go to eight. And look at the cartoon comparison and contrast between mitosis and meiosis. We've mentioned all this, but this is a good thing to go through again for this particular cartoon hypothetical species. So this is the same species in left and right undergoing mitosis and meiosis. What is the N for this species? Right, and why is it three? Not three of each type of chromosome, no. Three types of chromosomes. That's what N is, how many different kinds of chromosomes there are. And there are three of these, right? You can think of it as sizes. There's a large, a medium, and a small. Those are different kinds of chromosomes. Now, what is ploidy? The ploidy is how many of each type of chromosome there are. And so, what word do we say is the ploidy here? 2N is a symbol representing the ploidy, but what's the word?
It's diploid.
Yes, these are diploid cells at the top. The one that's entering mitosis is diploid, the one that's entering meiosis is diploid. Now, it wouldn't make sense for a haploid cell to enter meiosis, right? Because you only have one of each already. You can't divide it in half again. We're used to thinking of diploid cells entering mitosis because most, like I said, our somatic cells are diploid. But any sort of cell can enter mitosis, any eukaryotic cell, regardless of its ploidy. If you're a fungus, you're made up of haploid cells, right? You became multicellular by your haploid cells splitting by mitosis into two haploid cells. So it's not a requirement to be diploid for meiosis or for mitosis. Whatever the ploidy is for a cell entering mitosis, the two cells that result are going to have that same ploidy. So if it's diploid entering, it's diploid exiting. If it's haploid entering, it's haploid exiting. This one happens to be diploid, though. Okay? So one important difference, remember, is that in prophase of mitosis, what would be considered homologous chromosomes don't care about each other, right? They don't find each other. They don't synapse. And they don't cross over. So there are six independent replicated chromosomes in this cell for that reason. The two number ones don't care. And so on. And in meiosis, they do. So it's a diploid cell entering meiosis. Therefore, there are homologous pairs in that same cell. The two number ones come together, synapse, and cross over. Same for the number twos and the number threes, or however many there are. How many are there in general? Not just this specific case, but how many homologous pairs are there in general?
Three.
Not in this specific case. In general. In general, 46 overall chromosomes in humans, but I'm saying in general, how many homologous pairs are there in a diploid cell? That's a specific number. I'm saying if you don't know what the species is, how many homologous pairs are there in general? That's what in general means. Yeah, but there's a more specific answer. That's a specific case. This is not 46, so that answer is not true in general. What's the answer always? That's what in general means. No. N. There are N pairs. Right? That's what makes a diploid cell diploid, because there are pairs, not just singles. Right? A haploid cell will have N single chromosomes. A diploid cell has N pairs of chromosomes because there's two of each. A triploid cell would be 3N, right? There would be three of every kind of chromosome, and a tetraploid would have four, and so on. Those were unusual cases, but haploid and diploid are the usual cases. Okay, so I'm asking you this a different way, just so that I'm trying to hammer into your head the notion of N and ploidy, which people confuse all the time. Okay? So, yes, you could say this N is 3 because 2N equals 6, and you could do that mathematically by looking at this thing. But without any labels, it should be clear to you that the N is 3 for this cell, and that it's diploid. Okay? So make sure it is. Well, really big important difference is in metaphase. We said this in the previous slide, but now you can see it more clearly and closer up. In metaphase of mitosis, individual replicated chromosomes line up. So if it's a diploid cell, that means 2N different things line up. Whereas in a meiosis 1 of metaphase, metaphase 1 of meiosis, it's N different pairs of chromosomes that line up. Right? So in this case, 3, because N is 3. Therefore, What splits is different? Mitosis splits sister chromatids, and then that's the only division. Therefore, since, you know, by the way, the reason mitosis does not change the ploidy is because kind of what we is kind of a word game. Remember, when a chromosome has twice as much DNA as it needs for one cell because it has already replicated, we still consider that to be one chromosome, right? Because it's still connected at the centromere. Well, when you split those apart, that means you're really creating two chromosomes out of one, right? But you're putting them into two different cells. Therefore, each cell still contains the same number of chromosomes, and the ploidy has been maintained. On the other hand, in anaphase one of meiosis, when you separate homologs from each other in that pair, one cell gets only one homolog and the other cell gets only one homolog. So it went from having two of each type to having one of each type. That's why it's a reduction in ploidy. So it goes from 2N to N in meiosis 1. But the two cells that result at the end of meiosis 1, they now are just like cells entering mitosis, except they are already haploid. This would be like a normal fungus cell, like I told you about, making up its body, right? It's already haploid. That just happens to be the kind of cell it is. But like any cell entering mitosis, it has the problem of having replicated chromosomes, double the amount of DNA. So it needs to go through a division event that will separate those chromatids. Mitosis does that. And meiosis 2 does that. Okay, now another thing you see by the coloring here is what we've talked about in terms of the additional sources of genetic variation that sex provides. Crossing over first in prophase 1, and then independent assortment during metaphase 1 takes whatever variation is there and amplifies it. And so because of those two things, the four cells that are produced as in the final, after both meiosis steps, are all distinct genetically. Now, of course, they're genetically different from the parent cell, or the cell that entered meiosis, because the cell that entered it was diploid, and these are all haploid cells. But they're also, notice, all different from each other because of crossing over and independent assortment. Right? Now, not only are all four different, but every gamete or every cell produced by meiosis that organism is ever going to produce are going to be different from each other. As a human male, for instance, I make millions of sperm every day. Many millions every day, every single day. I've been doing that for decades. Probably will for another couple decades if I live. And even though it's millions every day for several decades, the chance that two of my sperm will be the same as each other genetically is effectively zero. And in fact, I could live for a hell of a long time, many, many centuries, and still never produce two sperm that are alike. And that's because of how many different ways there are to cross over and independently assort, which is why every human is genetically different. But not just for humans, the same is true for any organism that has multiple chromosomes, which eukaryotes do. I'm not going to read number 9 to you, but like all the rest of these summary slides, that's a good thing to look at when you're studying. We just went through this pretty much, though. That leaves a couple slides left to look closer at crossing over and independent assortment. Now, keep in mind, as I've said already, crossing over happens first, because that's prophase 1, and then independent assortment. For some reason, this book has the slides reversed, and I never fixed it. But slide 10 is dedicated to independent assortment. Just keep in mind this happens after the next slide. In this organism, what is N? N is two. Big and small, right? There are two kinds of chromosomes, and it's diploid. So notice that if you have two chromosomes exactly, if your species has an N equal to 2, which ours doesn't, ours is 23, but it depends on the species, then there are two different ways that you could independently assort, as you can see here. It could be just, each one flips a coin, basically. Each pair randomly lines up. But if you have two, then the two possibilities are that one cell is going to get both reds and the other one's going to get both blues. Or the only other possibility is that one of them's going to get a red big one and a blue small one. The other one's going to get a blue big one and a red small one. Right? Now, if I had three instead, then there would be twice as many possibilities, because for each of these two possibilities, there would be two possibilities for that third one that you put in there, right? And actually, even though this is listed as two possibilities, it's going to end up making four different kinds of cells, which you can see on the bottom here. Even if you had an N of one, doesn't matter which way it lines up, it's still random, but doesn't matter, because if you only have that one chromosome, you're going to have one cell get the red one and one cell get the blue one, right? But even though that's only one possibility, that ends up making two different kinds of cells, right? Two different gametes. And then 2 times 2, if you have an N of 2. If you have an N of 3, it's 2 times 2 times 2. And so it keeps doubling every time you add an additional one, just like flipping a coin, right? There's two possibilities for flipping one coin. If you flip 2 coins, 4 possibilities. Flip 3, there's 8 possibilities. Flip 4 coins or flip the same coin 4 times, 16 possibilities, and so on. That means that the number of different gametes that can be produced, whether it's eggs or sperm, by meiosis, the number of different ones just due to independent assortment, ignoring anything else, is going to be, in general, 2 raised to the n power. Right? If it's n of 1, it's 2 possibilities, 2 to the 1. Well, for humans, therefore, that means that there are 2 to the 23rd different kinds of sperm that a single man can make, just because of independent assortment. And 2 to the 23rd power, which is a little over 8 million, seems like a big number, and it is. But that 8 million plus different kinds of sperm that could be produced just because of independent assortment is effectively zero. As big a number as that is, that's almost zero compared to the number of different ways that the chromosomes can cross over. Okay, so that 8 million, yes, that means a lot of variety, but it's a tiny fraction of the variety that was actually already caused because crossing over happened before that. By the way, crossing over is shown in the final slide, 11. This happens first. There's so many possibilities for a few reasons. One is that there are multiple chromosomes and they're all crossing over. But even if you consider just one homologous pair, keep in mind that each DNA is millions of nucleotides long, and therefore there are millions of different places that you could cross over just in one pair. That means it's going to be 2 to the millions of powers, which is effectively infinite. Then you can multiply it by the fact that you can cross over just once or twice within the same homologous pair. So you'd multiply that infinity by 2. And then you have the same thing happening in 23 pairs, so you multiply that double infinity many times by the fact that there's 23 different pairs, and it's a ridiculously huge number. Which is why, I mean, it's bigger by far than the number of atoms in the universe, which is a huge number, effectively infinite. And that's why I say that independent assortment doesn't really matter. You, at that point, there are so many possibilities. But think about it by analogy with the card deck. What this means is you have a card deck that is almost infinitely big. Each card is a different kind of gamut that you're able to produce because of crossing over. That already immense deck is then multiplied in size by 8 million. Because after crossing over, then you mix it up again by random, by independent assortment. So now you have a truly huge deck. And then you get to the third source of additional variation that sex provides, which is random fertilization. Okay? So the male and the female are both doing this, crossing over and independently assorting. So they have equally nearly infinite sized decks of cards. Random fertilization refers to the fact that a randomly chosen sperm from one mate joins in fertilization with a randomly chosen egg. So it's exactly like drawing one card from each parent's deck, which is almost infinite to begin with. And so the number of ways that you can do that is that almost infinity times that almost infinity. So that makes it truly ridiculous then, which is why even if we lived almost forever, we would and had children every year, or even every day, let's say. Let's say you have a child every day. It's still almost never going to happen that two of your children will have the same DNA. The only way it happens is by accident, when you're really, in a sense, we're trying to have a single child, and as a zygote, instead of splitting into two cells and then four, the zygote split into two cells that ignored each other, became separate zygotes, but they're identical because they came from the same original zygote, and then that is two new individuals, they become multicellular. So that's identical twins. Okay, so any questions on any of this chapter before we go to the next? Okay.